celebrating our 200th episode with Incoherent Ramblings, brings you
Phoenix City.
Hello and welcome to Phoenix City. I am joined by a full complement of podcasters. Is that the right noun?
The right noun? Yeah, collective noun for podcasting.
A pod of casters?
No. I don't know what it is, but it's not that.
A cast of podders?
Actually, I actually quite like the cast of podders. I'm quite a fan of that. But it sounds a bit more like plotters. But we did have plotters, didn't we? So maybe that's appropriate.
Well, having seen a fair few of us play football, not far off the mark.
At least three of us in this room.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. You listeners can determine which three.
Yeah.
Just make sure I'm in that three.
Yeah. Oh, yes. So let's crack on. The Knicks played the midnight game. I don't know if that's an analogy, euphemism, or God knows what. I did not stay up and watch this, I will freely admit.
Yeah, neither did I, mate.
But I did not watch it until last night.
Oh.
Oh, I watched it live, and I spent the second half drinking a lot.
Tell me how that's different from how you usually watch football.
Well, you know, normally I'd be drinking of celebration and still paying attention to the game. The second half got a little blurry because it was not going well.
Yeah.
But I have watched a replay as well. I don't know why I subject myself to these things.
Yeah. TW Goat. For example.
Oh, yeah.
No. Luckily, I've had a few weeks off from that as well, so I haven't watched that in a while. Yep. Probably be next few days.
Yep.
So, yes, not the best result. 4-2 loss in the end, which is probably fair enough, I think.
Certainly certainly was expected. Like, I didn't expect us to get anything, any point away at Perth, I would think would have been a bonus. Yep. I genuinely didn't believe, especially when we kick off at midnight, I didn't believe we were getting anything.
And it's stupid hot as well.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. I can understand why they went over a week early to try and get acclimatized. They left here on Monday, so they had a good 3 days in Perth to try and get used to that temperature. Probably helped because the performance wasn't horrendous in parts, but certainly there was I didn't think there was much show of us winning that game.
No, I don't think it was a particularly horrendous performance. As you say, it's a trip we expect not to come home with anything, and it pretty much went that way. I don't think it was particularly bad. I think you've already alluded to, I think the referee certainly some questions can be asked there. I think I'll probably have a different thought on that to you guys. But, I think, you know, we just looked subpar. I don't think we looked like absolute crap. I don't think it looks like our season's about to fall over. It just looked like a bad game. And, you know, when you consider the time difference and the heat difference and all of that stuff, it's not surprising that those are the ones we struggle with.
Yeah. I think it's fair to say that at least two of those goals looked as kind of the result of heavy legs, just not quite getting there with the split second that you'd hope that they would.
I'd say the second and the third were exactly. And maybe the fourth one, the late one, that's more, I think, because we were trying to press to get something and a man down, obviously. So, the second and third certainly looked like tired. Yeah.
The header at the back post by Daggers was that was just tired legs.
The third one, definitely. It was old Tails got caught out of position there.
Yep. So that remind me of the first goal. It's gone from my head.
That was Tomislav Mrchela.
Oh, yeah, the corner.
Header from the corner.
Yeah.
It glances off kind of a defender/attacker combo, kind of comes off their back a bit awkwardly, and then an unmarked man just nods it in.
Yeah.
Well, Rufa's there. Rufa doesn't jump.
If Rufa jumps, I still don't think he stops it, but it certainly makes it more difficult a header to make. Mm-hmm. But it may as well have been a free header because Rufa hasn't done enough there to block
that. And the deflection is what causes him, I think, to misjudge that. I think if that had been coming straight to his man, he would, of course, been contesting it. But
we see goals like these scored all the time. It's a pretty standard footballing goal, really.
Yeah, it's nothing pretty about it. That dude's got a giraffe neck, so he was always going to get first dibs at it.
Yeah.
It was a nicely taken goal. He did well considering that there was a bit of a touch on it, I thought.
And to be fair, up to that point, we had some opportunities. Obviously, the one that sticks in the mind was just before this, where Balls managed to put it wide, and then the steering plate's gone down the other end and stayed down there, and they've scored. So we weren't completely out of the game, but it was hard to say this was against the run of play. Like, Perth were the dominant side at that point. So
we looked, it looked plausible we could nick one,
yes,
is what I would have said about the half to that point. Was, you know, we were certainly under the pump and feeling some pressure, but on the counter, we looked, you know, plausibly like we could score.
Yeah.
But once we went down, you suddenly went, okay, well, at best, we might be able to get a goal and think we're back in this, but it's probably gone now.
Yeah.
We needed to go up to really have a chance for this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think I looked at the stats at halftime and we had our fair share of possession. I think we were slightly ahead. But all the kind of the indicators, like shots on goals, shots, corners, all that were just well in Perth's favour. And it was just, it was looking a bit dire.
Yep.
Yeah, as you say, I think we just needed to nick a goal and just hang on for grim death. But, yeah, pop aside, they really don't like setting up to give you a sniff, especially early on. Yeah, and this was one of those ones. The second goal.
This
second
was beautiful. Half, this was a beautiful goal.
There was the passing goal, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was just a really beautiful, intricate passing manoeuvre. I think Fornaroli's done the last pass across to D'Agostino, and he's done a lovely finish as well past Marinovic, but there was some really good interplay. Kilkenny to the right winger. I can't remember who that was, honestly. It just eludes me, the person who was there. And he's
wasn't Economidis.
No, he's out injured for the season. Injured. Yeah.
And Diego Costa, Diego Castro was out as well.
Yeah. So I don't remember who it was. But yeah, it was just really lovely, intricate passing moves, and they just passed around us. It was really nice. And D'Agostino is unmarked at the top of the box, and he has a beautiful little finish. It was really nice. Really nice goal. I was really impressed.
Yeah, for mine, this was the goal that really tells us how good Steinman is. We haven't been cut apart like that, I think, all season. It's basically been a bit of individual brilliance and maybe a bit of shithousery at the back that's really undone us, but never passed to death through the middle, you know. Certainly, yeah, I don't think Rufus is going to be exactly happy with his game.
No, I think Rufus will be sitting out in the next one. Assuming Steinman's back to full fitness, he walks back in with Devon.
Yeah, what do you know why he didn't start?
He was sick. He didn't travel.
Oh, right, okay.
So he was on the squad for the Handy Prem game, I think.
He was on the Sunday, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, he wasn't in.
Right, okay. I wasn't sure about that. I saw the tourist name go up for that. Thought, shit, that's a bit of a dumping.
No.
Okay, yeah. Obviously, he's trying to get a goal in Handy Prem just to add to his tally, like Hooper.
I mean, why wouldn't you have given the opportunity?
Yeah. I thought they shut down Davila quite nicely. Really just didn't get the ball in their third at all. I can't for the life of me think of a good instance where he got the ball and was in the third and was able to kind of like do anything.
Yeah, very little influence in that. He couldn't, like, even dropping deep to get ball, you know, there's little space, there's little time, I guess, is what they've managed, and they managed to just effectively mark out him out by effectively marking channels as well as the player. There was no feed into him. And when you lose your creative outlet like him, puts a lot of pressure on ball, and ball, I don't think ball was having the worst game, and he certainly created a couple of opportunities in there. But
he doesn't finish. We know this.
If you're taking if you're taking all that pressure, if you're putting all that pressure on him from losing the influence of Davila, then it's going to impact on his game as well.
Yeah, I think Steinman's passing would have definitely helped from that midfield. We know that
absolutely.
Devlin's an absolute terrier, but not. He's the sort of guy that will skip past someone and do a short pass rather than I will ping a long pass towards you, which is what Davila, I think, needs just to get a yard ahead of
him. And I think it loses that option behind him as well. If he does need to, you know, if Davila's struggling and can't get it going forward, being able to come back to Steinman and having to open it up as easily as he seems to be able to, losing that is a big problem for him as well, because you had ball working hard, but the two of them just didn't seem to be able to make anything work.
Yeah.
And they didn't really feel like they had that option to come back and rebuild. You know, obviously there were people there, but it's not the same creative style that you are getting with Steinman that can just really open it up sometimes.
We should probably talk about the big decision up top, Soterio over Hooper. I think
but
we
out
all
wide,
kind of.
Wasn't he?
Yeah, well, Soterio, you're never playing him straight through the middle because that'd be a waste. But that's still it's still a big call. I think pretty much we all were hoping that it would be done. How do we think it paid off?
Well, hindsight is a wonderful, wonderful thing, and we say it didn't work in this one, but it was really? The right. It was, I think, personally, it was the right decision to make.
Do you reckon that it
Hooper's come off and scored two
goals? Yeah,
yeah. Well, no, I'm thinking that may actually indicate that it was a good move. That bringing Hooper on for 30 minutes while everyone's busted in that heat gives him the opportunity to get a yard of space.
Perhaps. But I think it's assuming that Hooper's older than he is. I mean, he's yeah. not young anymore. He's not going to be as fit or as fast as Soterio, but he's young enough. He should still have 90 minutes in him. You know, we don't know that he's at that level yet, but that certainly should be the goal, is that Hooper should be at the level where we can get close to 90 out of him. You should be expecting 70 to 80. 70 to 80 minutes of Hooper up there doing what he was doing at the end there has got to be better than 30 minutes of Hooper.
Oh, no disagreement. You know, but
So if you're expecting that many minutes out of him, surely you've got to be starting him every week. But that said, I do understand why against Perth you think a bit of pace there, tire out those legs, but Hooper's not going to be happy about it. You know, only getting a half hour or so is not what he wants to be doing, and he came out and said as much in the media afterwards. Mm-hmm. But I think as fans, we expect a striker like that to be out there for 70 or 80 minutes as well.
Mm.
When he was at that stage where he didn't have the fitness for 30, he only had the fitness for 30, it makes complete sense. But well, I think we've got to be getting to the point where we expect him to be pretty close to full fitness now.
Well, I mean, that last game we saw him start, I think it was noticeable that he flagged very yep. early. Mm-hmm. And he looks like he's carrying a bit too much weight to do the amount of work that our side is yep. asking from him.
This might have been a pragmatic decision as well. He's going over to Perth where it's incredibly hot.
Oh, yeah.
We're not going to have a lot of ball. So when we do have it, what type of transition do you want? Do you want to have the pacey transition, which Soterio offers you, or do you want to have the hold-up transition, which Hooper offers you? I think in this situation, because of the energy-sapping nature of the environment they're playing in, Soterio is probably the right option. But Hooper, in hindsight, Hooper comes off the bench and scores two goals. Could have had more and played brilliantly. So, you know, yep. it's I think this decision didn't work, but I'm not going to hold it against Ufi because I'd have made the same decision.
Yeah, so. I agree. I think it wasn't necessarily the wrong call, but it didn't go well. Mm. I think no one's, you know, hindsight's wonderful. But ahead of the game, it made sense. I can see why he's done it. Yeah. Didn't work. I would expect a return to Hooper starting, but, you know, it all depends.
Yeah, you'd be thinking, though, with a home game against Victory, that City.
We're playing City this weekend, yep.
yes.
Yep.
That you'd if you don't start Hooper now, you know.
Well, then you're never going to start him, are you?
No, and he becomes super sub, and I don't think there's no chance he's going to stay happy for no.
Well, I think Alan makes the great point. If you don't start him now, you're never starting him. If you're never starting him, he's never staying. Do you want him to stay for another year? I don't know. That's not a decision that we would make. And I don't think we've seen enough of him to make that decision. But if he's not getting 70 to 80, which he should be by now, and which we need from that player, especially for the dollars that we're shelling out
for him. How long are we satisfied with spending that amount of marquee money on a player that you're getting for 30 minutes a game? Like, is that the best spend of that money?
I mean, if he's getting you two goals every game, I mean, that's a different discussion. But I don't think that's the 30 minutes you're going to get every game.
Yeah.
And in a game where you're down by four, do the two goals matter? You know?
Yeah.
What I think it was Dale made the point of how many more goals we score when he's on the park to when he's off the park.
Yeah.
And it's not he's involved in those, it's his influence alone.
It's the space it creates, and, you know, it gets defenders second guessing. I mean, you can't not be marking him, and you've probably got to double mark him, you know. Yeah. It opens up options for everyone around them.
And that's kind of the thing I was wondering with having De Veer and Ball up top. They've lost the option in front of them as well of who to play off. The two of them were having to be up top kind of by themselves in a way, so they've not got that kind of bounce and then creating that space for them. So that
in that situation, I'd actually prefer De Veer Piscopo behind Ball Hooper up top, I think. But I think that perhaps might be how they go against City, where we're expecting a very different type of game.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. Davila, he needs to operate in that second, kind of in that second tier. It doesn't work when he's up top, I don't think. He just can't get enough of the ball. Obviously City in...
We've still got more of the first game to discuss. Yeah, we've only gone through two of the goals so far.
Do we really want to talk about the other ones?
So the third goal was D'Agostino's second.
Back post.
Ball through to the back post, and it's been... it's come to the byline, and Kim has done a... Yeah. Chipped cross to D'Agostino, who's unmarked in the box and heads home. Taylor called out of position, but Taylor had pushed up to the through ball to Kim. So, the speed of the transition between those sections of passing was what called him out in that position. So, I'd have expected De Veer to come across, but I haven't seen the replay to see if De Veer was on anybody.
There was a defender in there, but he looked kind of flat-footed, and D'Agostino kind of made a quite a good late run to their back post.
He did. Yeah. And Payne had gone to follow Kim.
Yeah.
So he couldn't get the run. He couldn't get the through ball. If he hadn't gone there, Kim controls and brings it in. So no, it was a nicely worked goal by Perth. And as we said earlier, tired legs, I think, cost us that one.
Yeah. Yeah. So obviously we managed to peg it back there. Hooper being brought on, and was it the
cross from Tim?
That was a beautiful cross.
It was. The positioning from Hooper was perfect, playing off the shoulder of the last defender. He gets onside by the, I think it was the Perth left-sided centre-back, has dropped back just as the ball was played from Tim Payne to put him onside, because he's literally right on that borderline. It could have been off if they'd gone VAR. If he hadn't dropped back, it would have been pretty close. But yeah, on the head, absolutely perfect. And that's exactly what you expect from Hooper.
Well, what I love about this cross was that Payne got so deep into the byline for a start, to the goal line rather, and that's massively important if you want to get a cross in. But the whip he gets on it, so that it gives the attacker every chance to hit it in, and it gives the defenders every chance to hit it in as well. Yeah. I mean, that is brilliant. I mean, unfortunately, it was Timmy Payne's probably finest moment, and it was a very fine moment, but he didn't have many others. We should probably get on to the second goal.
Well, in between those was obviously the red card incident. Are we going to talk about that, or do you want to save it to the end?
I wanted to save it to the end, actually, just because I think it goes into a larger theme.
Fair enough.
You know where I'm going with
this. I know exactly where you're going with
that. The second goal, Hooper again.
Yeah.
And I'm drawing a blank.
So it was a throw-in. Devlin's got the ball.
Lovely little nutmeg.
Yeah, beautiful nutmeg pass through from Devlin to Hooper, and then the nutmeg on the finish as well to go inside post. So he's basically controlled, turned, and the finish has been between the defender's legs and near post of the keeper. It was really nice.
Yeah,
really,
that was really a quality finish.
Yeah.
There's not much you can say about that. Just a bit of individual brilliance, really.
Poacher in the box. It's what he's good at. And, again, if that's what he's providing for you each game and he's giving you assists and goals like that and he's going to score 10 a season if he does that, perfect. That's exactly what we need from him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, probably his best performance as a player in the – taking away the goals, the best performance as a player I think I've seen from him this season.
Yeah, the ratio of quality that he put out there for the – regardless of the time he put out there was top-notch.
Yeah.
We've seen him drift in and out of games. We've seen him – be a little erratic in games, but that was 30 top quality minutes.
Yeah.
And I think if he was able to put 50 of those minutes in for us,
I'll take an hour of those minutes.
Yeah. I don't care if he's on for 80 or 90. If he puts 50 or 60 of those minutes on, we aren't losing.
No. We'll be scoring plenty of goals.
Yeah. We should obviously give credit to Mr. Fornaroli for that last goal.
It's beautiful.
But a bit of space in front of the back four, to be fair. They dropped and no one had pressed him. Wow, he has put that away.
Yeah, nice finish. Again, I think I put that down to us pressing and tired legs, pressing, trying to get up there. 89th minute and energy zapping heat, and he pulls out an absolute worldie. So, you know, good on him. It was a great finish. And to be fair, thoroughly deserved. Like, Perth deserved to win 4-2.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the first time we've conceded four this season. The first time we've really looked like conceding for this season. Because up to this point, defensively, whilst we are going to concede, it certainly feels like we're always going to concede one. It doesn't really feel like we're going to see too many more than that, you know?
No, we don't. Mm. We're not prone to huge lapses of concentration. It's just the odd one where we just slightly get caught out, I feel, or we get a worldie put on us.
Yeah.
And that was. Yeah. The curl on that was just impeccable. I mean, Marinovic doesn't get beaten by shitty ones, does he?
No, he doesn't.
Right, we should probably get on to the
cursing.
Well, let's just go with the cards. The Tim Payne red. Quite a few people have been a little upset about this. Anyone want to fight me on that? It was perfectly legit second yellow.
Yep,
you're right.
Sorry, what?
It's a legit second yellow.
I don't like it. I think it's at the low end.
Yeah.
But I can see a yellow being given for this, and I don't have much of a problem with him picking up his red here. His first yellow, and he certainly made some other yellow-worthy challenges. This one is at the lower end, but it's the one he gets, you know?
It's literally, it's an accident, but it's...
The argument being made by, you know, friend of the podcast, Chris Kerr, on Twitter is that this is breaking up a promising attack. It doesn't matter whether it was accidental or not. Mm-hmm. I have trouble seeing this as a clear-cut promising attack. Yeah. I mean, it's deep in his own half. Yeah. There's defenders, there's attackers, you know. At that point, what isn't a promising attack? Anytime a ball is coming down the sideline, arguably it's a promising attack by that definition. But I don't have that much problem with it either. I think even if you were to just give it to him for persistent fouls, it might have been justified because he has a few, and some of them were reasonably robust challenges.
Yeah.
Just accidental. Yeah, that was the only thing I don't particularly like about it.
This challenge is not on its own, is not worthy of a yellow.
It's not a challenge.
Exactly. However, on persistent infringement and the type of infringement he's done prior to this, you can accept a yellow being given. But that incident in itself is not yellow worthy.
Oh, I had my mind changed by Chris Kerr. I went back and looked at the replay and
there's so many other defenders back there. There really are though. I've watched it a bunch of times.
There was someone cutting across.
Yeah, but there's an attacker there, but it's it might be going to become a promising attack, but I don't think it's
he had the wheels to be in that final third before anyone got to him.
But I will freely admit, I don't know the promising attack rule as well as I know like Dogso or the other ones. And
I read through Chris's links that he put up because he was quite thorough as he tends to be. And the promising attack, the promising part is the bit that they don't define.
Yeah, they don't define it at all.
But there was a conversation between him and other friend of the pod, Tam, who both very qualified referees.
Yeah.
And I think probably fairly good. I've not seen them ref though. I've
seen Chris. Yes.
Yeah, I haven't seen Tam though. But, you know, both of them, both of them saying easy yellows, especially based on the advice that they're given about how to interpret that promising thing. And it's like if they're both going easy yellow, not even a chance, but also absolutely laying into Kersey for the rest of the game.
Yeah. And that's the thing that gets me, because I will always struggle to find someone that deep in their own half and being able to class that as a promising attack, unless the field in front of them is basically clear. Yes. And that's not the case here. As far as I'm concerned,
they're an incredibly quick striker.
I'm concerned, this is just normal football. It's them clearing it out from the back. That's all that's happened there. That's not a promising attack. That's just the ball coming out. But I can see the argument. I don't think it's the worst argument. I'm willing to accept the yellow. But some of the other stuff that went on in this game was just unbelievable.
It was just garbage.
I mean, by the standard of the refereeing, like across the game, I suppose that yellow card wasn't keeping with that.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't think it was, because I felt like there was a dice being rolled.
Yeah, that was the thing for mine. I think there were a lot of yellow card challenges out there that weren't even called fouls. No. Some of them were called fouls, and some of them just, you know,
there was a play few
on. And the things he did choose to give cards for, particularly early on in the game, were some of the softest fouls you've seen. And then some of the ones, you know, sliding in two-footed studs up. Oh, that's fine. Play on. And you're like, what is going on here?
The number of studs up challenges. And I'm sitting there like, what? And there was an ankle. There was basically a touch of an ankle early on. I can't remember who did it. But, you know, it was a bit clumsy, a bit no malice. No, it was just, man, I'll stick my foot in and see what happens.
You have just described Tim Payne's second yellow card.
No. But again, that's not for the challenge.
Challenge, yeah. That's the thing. It's for breaking up a promising attack.
It comes clumsy. It's an ankle tap. He didn't mean it. It was an accident. He still gets yellow.
No. See,
Kersey was horrendous.
The difference, though, is for a challenge, if you're being done for, you know, reckless, careless, anything like that, accidental does matter. Breaking up a promising attack can be as accidental as you like. If it broke up a promising attack, it's yellow, regardless of what you did. You can slip and fall on your ass.
But we all agree that it wasn't breaking up a promising attack.
Well,
I don't.
That's the thing. I think there's enough of a blur on that line of was this a promising attack that I'm okay. I'm willing to accept that one.
I'm prepared to accept that wasn't a yellow, because there is quite a blur on the promising attack line there. So there's enough opinion in here that says, how can that be a promising attack? It is a promising attack. What do you mean a promising attack?
We're not experts, Cam.
No.
It doesn't matter.
And the experts say
it's cloudy. It shouldn't have been a yellow.
No, the line should always be, and in scenarios like this where you're analysing it post-match and it's what the match review panel does and it's all of that, could a referee have given the card for that? Yes, absolutely they could have. I think it's at the very low end. I think it's very harsh. But I also can see how a referee could look at that and go, I think that's a promising attack. And that's why I'm like, if we're going to argue the toss about ones that are in the middle there, we have to argue every single thing and, you know, it's irrelevant. Whereas I think there are other ones, you know, it's the same with red. You know, you look at cards and go, that's an orange card. I think this is right on that line between not being a yellow, but I can see refs giving it and I'm okay with that.
No, I'm not. But you're right, Kersey was horrendous.
Yep.
An absolutely appalling game. I think I've seen it somewhere. I can't remember who said it. but it's the consistency of what to pull up.
It was been
a problem. Okay, well, and it's not just a problem for Kirstie, there's a problem across the league.
Yep.
There are plenty of refs in this league who, you know, you can't argue they with the ones they do call because they are fouls. You can argue with what they choose to give cards for because there are a lot of soft cards given, but they miss a lot of very bad challenges, which could, even if not a card, should definitely be fouls. And that the consistency of performance across the league is where the problem. And this was just highlighted perfectly in this game by Kirstie.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I think there are some referees in the A-League, and I'm not going to name names because I don't want to get into that, but I think there are some referees in the league who cop a lot of flack because they let a lot of the softer fouls go. Mm-hmm. But at least they're consistent. You know, when you've got those refs,
yep,
the standard of what's going to be a foul is going to be higher, and there's no point whinging about every little clip on you because you're not going to get him.
Yep.
And I think that's fine. I don't necessarily agree with those calls, and I think it makes for a very different game, but at least it's consistent, and as a player, you can play to that. I think Kirstie is at the complete other end of the spectrum in that sometimes he actually gets really complicated calls right. And I think, you know, you look at Kerr and Tam completely agreeing with the second yellow card on Tim Payne, going, yep, we agree, promising attack. And he's picked that up in the moment. He hasn't had to look at any replays. He hasn't had to, you know, explain his decision to anyone. He's seen it in the moment. He's made a call that, a bunch of other experienced referees go, yep, absolutely spot on. But then he's missed ones that are just people bobsledding each other.
Yep.
And that, how do you play to that? How do you know what's going to be called? How do you know where the line is as a player on what can I do here? Particularly if you're someone like Tim Payne and you're on a yellow card, what's going to be okay and what's not? You just stay away from the ball.
No, you just have to go on two-footed every time.
Because he's coming to
miss it.
He's always been inconsistent, Kirstie. I mean, Chris Cooper was basically saying that his ability to pick up fouls tends to be okay, but he doesn't know which one's the card. This game wasn't even that.
No.
It was like he was missing the absolutely dangerous ones and catching the absolute nothings. I mean, yeah, sure, fouls, blow the whistle, stick the ball down, play on. Mm. No, you know, don't even need to have a word. No one's going to argue. Man, some of those challenges from distance. And this happens with games where there's tired legs and people are really stretching and they're getting there late, and you've got to basically – as a ref, say, hey, guys, no, none of that. I'm calling these fouls. Yeah. I'm going to dish out a yellow here. And so, you know, this is the standard that gets you a yellow.
Yeah.
You do not do that.
And I think the other thing as well that, it sounds slightly sour grapes, but I don't intend it that way because I don't think this had an impact on the result of this game.
No, because both sides.
But I do think the early cards that Perth didn't get did impact the game as a whole. I think there were a few players, particularly in that midfield, who should have probably copped yellows in the first 20 minutes, who didn't get them the entire game.
But we know no one gets yellows in the first 20.
Being those players and being on yellows like they probably should have been, I think would have impacted the game. I think the result still ends up Perth regardless, but I do think it puts that added pressure on those players when they're on a yellow that early in the game.
Yeah.
And we had, I think it was Cam Devlin picked one up only 15 minutes in for, I think, quite a soft challenge. And, you know, that puts him on a yellow the entire rest of the game. And with such an inconsistent performance, I can only imagine how that is for him on the field going, well, I don't even know what I'm going to have to do.
As a centre midfielder, you're always in the play.
Yeah. And so I think if their players were picking up cards they deservedly should have had, the style and the attack and the challenges that come in all changes because of that. You know a defender's on a yellow, you might run at him, you know?
Yeah.
And that sort of stuff changes how you play. And it just didn't happen here. And that's often my complaint in the A-League is that yellow card challenges, and as Ella alluded to, you just don't get them in the first, 20 minutes or half an hour. It just doesn't happen. So as a league, we need to fix that because otherwise, why not just kick each other for the first 20 minutes and then, okay, now we can start playing football.
Yeah.
You know? It's not going to work, and it's going to be a problem that they have to address.
Yeah, I'm hoping that this is something that would come with a more professional league, is that, you do get more training, because it seems like the training that the refs are getting over here seems to be fairly consistent and seems to be giving a consistent message for them. Obviously,
you haven't been watching the Handy Prem games, have you?
Well, no. What I'm saying is that the messaging might be, but certainly not. They're not professionals. They're going to make mistakes. I mean, we can't expect a higher level from referees than we do for players.
Yeah.
So, just cut them.
I think it's interesting. We give them a lot of flack, but it was only a couple of years ago that those referees in the A-League were still amateur. And now we are moving to a professional system, and it arguably has got better. But I think it's causing us to expect significant improvements, and we're only seeing small improvements.
Yeah,
which is frustrating.
Yeah, also as long as you put the professional
The reality is it is going to take time, but hopefully we're going to see much bigger leaps and bounds, because I think we've seen only the smallest of steps up. And considering we've gone from amateurs to now you're getting paid and you're getting all this training and all of that stuff that we should be seeing.
And VAR.
You know, flowing through into better decisions, it doesn't feel like we're getting better decisions particularly.
No.
We're getting, you know, small improvement.
Yep. Right. How about we just leave it there before we work ourselves into a complete lather? Like
something he wants to get into.
No, I think he wants to get onto the rest of the
A-League. I'll just put up the rest of the A-League grounds now. Okay. Because I know we're going to get there eventually.
See you gleefully smiling at your phone like you
I was gleefully smiling at the VAR hand grenade he threw out, which I'm deliberately avoiding. I've gone the other way.
Yep, nice.
Because you're so pro-VAR. That seems fair enough. Good call, Cam.
Because I am sick of talking about that stupid fucking system.
Okay, let's move on before Cam. Vein in your forehead, mate.
Well, I can tell you, VAR does it to me, man.
Yep. So take us through the round, Cam.
Cool. So round kicked off with the Melbourne Derby. Melbourne City ran out 2-1 winners in that. Berenguer scored in the 8th minute to open it, and McLaren made it 2 in the 71st minute. And Toivonen scored late to make it 2-1. Then it was our game against Perth. The Sydney Derby was cancelled due to a waterlogged pitch. So that will be... Well, they had, 36 hours, had like 100 mils of rain.
It was more than that, actually.
150, and it was like going to be 100 the next day or something. Well,
it was absolutely phenomenal. But it's like,
is anyone else kind of like imagining like the apocalypse happening in Australia at the moment?
Yeah,
it's not burning, it's drowning.
Yeah, it's like the ground was so hard that the water couldn't soak in. So that kind of level of rain is just going to wash away topsoil. Therefore, it's going to take all vegetation. Honestly, it's just horrendous.
Well, it raises an interesting point that I am certainly not the first person to raise, but I think we'll give it some airtime. Is that, you know, the week before you had players having to play in, you know, what was only just skimming under the league's own, what do they call it, the wet globe test?
Yeah.
Wet bulb, sorry, test for the heat. And, you know, those games go ahead. It's like, oh, we gave you an extra drinks break, it's fine. But too much rain, we'll call it off. They're both player welfare issues. I mean, the reason you call a surface unplayable is not because you couldn't play football on it. You could. Mm. It's that it would be dangerous to do so.
Yeah.
It's not about the fact that it would be terrible football and be, you know, horrible watching and whatever. That's not why they're calling it off. The base underlying cause of that is a player welfare issue. People get hurt having to play in those conditions, whether it be from sliding tackles or just rolling ankles in the mud. It's dangerous and you call it off. And yet we won't call it off in the extreme heat.
Well,
we need to be able to sort that out and actually go, hey, player welfare comes first and call it off no matter what.
I'm hoping with a change in ownership of the league, something like that may actually happen.
Well, yeah, that is true. But I mean, it wasn't even just the heat and the humidity. It was the air quality.
Yep.
It was severely compromised. Yep. I think that's even worse. Yep. I mean,
well,
imagine
and
trying
the
to
W League games are so much worse for that as well.
Well, yeah, that was I can't remember who they were playing, but the Western Sydney Wanderers coach, you know, was kind of very upfront and saying, you know, the ref came to him before the game and said, look, you know, we're okay to play, but look out for your players that have got asthma. Now, if you're saying that to, like,
yeah.
Yeah. It just beggars belief.
Yeah, it does. Next game was Brisbane had a come from behind win to beat Adelaide 2-1. Heller had opened the scoring for 58th minute for Adelaide. Maradovic got the first for Brisbane, followed in the 68th minute, followed by Aldred in the 74th. That actually moves Brisbane into the top six.
Yeah, they're on a rich run of form at the moment. They are going to be challenging us very soon, I think.
And game of the round.
Is that how you want to describe it?
Well, it was certainly the one that the neutral should watch because it was the most entertaining.
Yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed it.
Was Newcastle Jets 4, Central Coast Mariners 3.
Attack 7, defence 0.
Yeah. Newcastle opened scoring in the 15th minute through Demi Petratos, and then went 2-0 up thanks to Nikolai Topor-Stanley in the 25th minute.
Ugh.
Tonyuk scored in the 45th to make it 2-1 at half time, and then Clisby scored right at the start of the second half in the 49th minute to make it 2-2. Then Petratos scored again in the 52nd minute to make it.
Are you sure it's the same Petratos? Because his little brother got on.
It was the same.
Demi got all the goals, though.
Yeah. Oh, did he?
Yeah. Okay.
And then in the 55th minute, there was an own goal. So the first 10 minutes of the second half scored 3 goals, which was quite impressive. So it's 4-2. And then a late goal, 86th minute, to Harold, made it 4-3 and give Mariners a bit of hope. But they couldn't close it out.
Well, that final goal, though, did keep them from the wooden spoon because it's now only goal difference that separates them. And the goal difference was going to put Jets off the bottom of the table?
Well, looking at the table,
isn't it?
Mariners was minus 15, Jets was minus 17. Yeah, so literally, and they both scored 17 goals. So
prior to that final goal, the goal difference would have been the same, and Jets would have been one ahead on goals scored. Correct. Yeah.
Awesome. That's awesome.
So that final goal would have been a bit of a kick in the guts for the Jets after getting the win and working hard. They would have probably liked to have seen that, you know, that lift off the bottom would have been a real, morale booster for them, but they didn't get that sadly.
Yeah. So looking at the table, hasn't really changed at the top. Brisbane moving into the six ahead of Western United. There's been obviously Perth now created a gap between us and them. That's a bit expected, to be honest. I still expect Perth, if they've got a game in hand over Melbourne, if they win that game, they go in second. And I think that's probably where they should be. Perth and Sydney appear to be the top two.
It's kind of what we predicted at the start of the season, wasn't it?
Like it was. We thought Victory would be up in third, but obviously they've fallen apart, which is lovely to see. But it's going to be a bit of a shit fight for that for the last three places, I think, in the playoffs with us in fourth on 24, Adelaide in fifth on 24. They've scored more goals than us, but we've got better goal difference by one goal. And Brisbane in sixth on 22, and Western United in seventh on 21. So it's all pretty tight. There's one win between all four of those teams.
I'll be quite honest. The way it kind of feels to me is that Western United are just dropping away. They're slowly dropping down the table, whereas I see Brisbane jagging up. The same with Perth. It just feels like Perth are the second best team and they will overtake. It's a matter of time before they overtake Melbourne City. Mm-hmm. Melbourne City are a bit up and down. So I could see any one of those teams in the top, from four to six, pipping Melbourne City for third.
There is two massive games in the top for the top six this weekend. Obviously, us playing Melbourne City is a huge one, and Western United are playing Brisbane Roar. So that's another huge game with 1 point between those two. And the winner of that game is stealing a march on the other, I think.
I don't see anything bar Brisbane winning that. I genuinely don't.
It's away from home, so I could see a point, but I see what you say.
We should probably add that Western United have signed a Japanese defender today.
Cool.
Yeah. I've never heard of him before.
No, he hasn't really been playing either. I didn't do much reading on him, but the vibes on kind of the Reddit thread and stuff were that he's not played much football and doesn't seem like he's a particularly good buy.
Yeah, they said he'd played 18 games in J1 last year or something.
Yeah, but across the last 4 years, he's only played 20 or something. So he kind of got a look in last season through injuries to the squad. But he's been over there a long time and has just been a squaddy from the sounds of it.
Yeah, he played a lot of J2. He might be quite competent, but Western United, they've lost too many players and...
Yeah, well, so I want to ask because I genuinely don't know the answer, but has anything come of all these rumours of lack of wages? Because that's still swirling about on, that whole thread was full of it, basically saying pay your staff instead of signing a new player and stuff like that, it's all coming from somewhere and it's certainly there's good for the popcorn eating, but...
There's nothing concrete said in the media by those people that know.
But there's certainly got to be something.
The rumours are coming from somewhere.
Yeah.
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 So we're in Auckland.
Yeah. Yes, we should probably get on.
Who's
to
going?
Not me, my mate.
Just you, Cam.
I'm in the wrong country.
Yeah. Oh, really? You're going back to Oz for more W League trips?
Well, the idea was to go to a W League game, but I'll get to that later.
Okay, cool.
Right. Someone's got a new job.
I wish. No.
So, Eden Park. Yeah. And I've forgotten all the details. Do you remember them, Cam?
7:30 PM on Saturday night. We play Melbourne City at Eden Park. Great venue. Love going there, looking forward to it.
Yeah, hopefully it gets a good turnout. It's not like we've been playing bad football.
We're sitting fourth, we're playing really good football. Over the course of the first four games of the season, we've had a great season. You'd say, and so since that point, once they started to gel and get some points, it looked really good. Every reason people get along. Melbourne City, I say they're inconsistent, but they are second in the league, so they're playing good football as well. We've got a really, really good chance of knocking them over. We kind of need the win. Especially with our next game against being Western United here on the following Friday, this is kind of like a 6 point week that we really need to get 6 points.
Yeah, that is very true. Snakes on the plane was obviously the joke that everyone's going to be making, but Melbourne City, I don't know that they're going. I don't know, it just feels like Eden Park is not going to get a big crowd again. I mean, what was it last year?
Last year, 24,000 last year.
What was the game that they
played in December? We got 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it feels like, yeah, it's.
I think they'll get something similar. Yeah.
12?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, me too. It's such a shame.
It's disappointing. Like, yeah. if this season we're actually playing some exciting football, we've got, you know, some decent big name, you know, players, we've got the table position, you know, we're looking good. I don't know what else it takes if a crowd can't turn out to this one. I think at that point you've got to wonder what does it take to get a crowd in Auckland other than, you know, playing a final up there. Even then, would you take the gamble on that, yeah, given they don't seem to turn out from
you wouldn't. You'd come here because you know the Wellington football crowd would come out.
Would come, yeah.
I mean, if you were to reverse the roles and say the Knights were still playing all up in Auckland and they were in fourth and playing good football and they came down here, you'd be saying, yeah, we'd get 20. You know, 20, 25.
You'd certainly get at least 12, which is what they're getting in Auckland, but with a quarter of the size of the population.
Yeah. So I hope they get, you know, that 20. That'd be great. You know, that's what we need to be getting up there, but it's incredibly disappointing when we don't. And I don't know what more they can do. I mean, people criticize the advertising and all that, but when they've done all the advertising, they still don't get the crowds. And, you know, I don't know that blaming it all on that is enough. I think people just need to bloody get out, come along.
I mean, is it a New Zealand sport thing anyway? Because, you know, we're hearing about rugby, you know, dying off and that kind of thing. It's not just isolated to us and the football and that sort of thing. It's just people don't turn up.
It's global.
Yeah. Oh, and you've got Super Rugby has started now and, you know, all of that stuff. The cricket season's still going. Yeah. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of sport at the moment competing for eyeballs. And we definitely seem to be low down that pecking order, which is frustrating.
Yeah, you do need that perfect storm. You need that weekend in Auckland where this is the main marquee event. You know, the Warriors are going to be starting off fairly shortly as well, so you couldn't play it later. It would be ideal to play it probably Auckland anniversary weekend, but I think they put they generally put cricket on about the same time. If you're going to do it, I think if you chuck it on that Auckland anniversary weekend, that's when you might get a crowd, so they could try that for next season because, you know, the rugby's not quite started, the league's not quite started. You might have a chance.
Yeah.
Have you got the league for the next round? Obviously, we're playing in Eden Park. There are some. You mentioned that there was the Brisbane Western United.
Yeah, that's the Sunday game. Western United at home to Brisbane. The round kicks off on.
Are we doing predictions?
Valentine's Day. Oh, we haven't done them for a while, but we can.
Yeah, why not?
We don't mind. It's fair. Adelaide United play Central Coast Mariners in the Valentine's Day game.
Adelaide, their form has been falling off. They need that 3 points. Otherwise, they're just going to lose touch.
They haven't drawn a game this season. I think they've got 8 wins and 8 losses this season.
But they're yo-yoing up and down.
Yeah. Okay, so obviously our game is second against Melbourne City, and that's followed by Western Sydney Wanderers against the Newcastle Jets. And the round closes, so it's more around this week, Western United against Brisbane Roar.
Mm.
So there's two big, big games for the playoffs.
I want to throw Adelaide Mariners in that. They need those 3 points. Otherwise, they can't be that.
And if you don't do that, it's big for Wanderers as well because they're on 17 points. If they don't win that game, they lose touch. They're gone.
I think they're struggling. Points. Yeah, they're struggling to keep touch anyway. So whereas Adelaide are well in it. Mm.
Is there any sign of when they've rescheduled the Sydney Derby? No, I haven't heard anything yet, but the implication I got was they were hoping to do it reasonably soon, but obviously
there was some talk
we're days in and it doesn't seem to be there.
And AFC is going to complicate things.
Well, it's going to be interesting when that does fall in the end because it'll mean having a midweek fixture or them having to play during an international window or something like that.
It'll be a midweek fixture.
That'll certainly, you know, have implications for the games around it either way. So it'll be interesting to see where it does fall.
Actually, an international window, I don't know if they'd be that adverse to it, would they? I mean,
we're already playing through international windows this season.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So there's no guarantee that there's going to be a space there to play those games.
Yeah, fair.
It's going to have to be a midweek fixture. But it could be a midweek fixture in the international window. Yeah, and that next one is late March. So it's really, really late in the season.
Which is probably better for everyone concerned because the last thing you want is a mid-February game where it's stinking hot and you've got 3 games.
Being able to hype up a Sydney derby with that much more lead time, you know, you don't want to go, it's next Wednesday now. I think you lose some of the draw of a Sydney derby, whereas being able to go, oh, we're going to play it after the regular season's finished or, you know, like suddenly that's a really tasty derby potentially.
Yep, yep. We should get on to the W League because it's not kicking off. It's like kicking under almost.
Well, it's just kind of resurfacing.
Petering out.
Petering back up again.
Okay.
Yeah.
Unpetering?
Yeah. Reverse petering.
Reverse petering.
Return.
Isn't reverse petering, don't they play in Conference North or something?
mean, probably. Yeah, no, so there's not been any W League for the last couple of weeks because of the reshuffled. Well, there was always going to be the international break for the Olympic qualifiers, which obviously got shuffled around because of the coronavirus concerns. So that's been going on in Sydney at the moment. The last games for that are on tomorrow night in Sydney. But this weekend, yeah, obviously the all fixtures kick back off again. So on Saturday, it's a Sydney derby, Sydney FC hosting Western Sydney Wanderers, which last time around the Wanderers beat Sydney 5-0, so should be a tasty game. Yeah. Sunday, we've got Perth Glory hosting Brisbane Roar, Canberra United hosting Adelaide. And on Sunday, much to my disappointment, Melbourne Victory are playing Melbourne City. My cunning plan was to go over and watch the game because it was originally supposed to be played on Thursday night, but because of the rejig fixtures, that's been pushed out a bit, and that's literally when I'm flying home. Oh, that is my sob story for today.
Gutting. Yeah. So you get a weekend in Melbourne instead.
Yep. Going to the AFLW on Friday night instead.
Oh, nice. So, yeah, very good. So that flies out on you flying out tomorrow.
Yep.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
I saw Ellie Riley.
Yeah, joined Orlando Pride, which didn't see that coming, but it makes a hell of a lot of sense.
It's quite the transition from Bayern to Orlando.
It was a similar – when she made the move from Chelsea to Bayern, it was because she wasn't getting much game time at Chelsea. She's in a similar position at Bayern, which is not getting much game time. Obviously, leading into the Olympics, she needs game time. But the NWSL season, you know, preseason starts in a couple of weeks. That kicks off in April. It makes sense. Orlando are a team that are kind of rebuilding. They were pretty poor last season, you know, despite having, you know, the players like Alex Morgan, Marta, so on and so forth. They were quite disjointed. So there's a bit of a rebuilding project going on there, which obviously should be great to be part of. But yeah, it's a move very much with the Olympics coming up kind of in mind. Yeah.
Shall we, seeing as we're talking Olympics, there is the All Whites fixtures have been, I don't know if they are officially released.
Yeah, but so playing Bahrain and I think Oman in March.
Mid to late March.
Yeah, in that March window. Both away, obviously. So ideal for those players in Europe who can get across and they get their window, get the break. So, you know, that should be a fairly decent team that they put out over there. Probably the last games we're going to get prior to the Nations Cup, which is going to be an under-23s team anyway.
Yep.
So I can imagine this will be the last time the boys get together for at least until August, September.
So. Oh, and the rest. Mm. And the rest.
Yeah. And the Ferns have just announced today that they've got a tour in Japan.
Prior to the Olympics?
Yep. So it's in April. So they've got a three-day training camp, game behind closed doors on the 9th of April, opposition yet to be confirmed. And then on the 11th, they've got obviously the full Japan side.
Awesome.
So that'll be a tasty game. Yeah.
That's really good. Obviously, Japan's looking for some game times themselves leading to Olympics because they've not got the qualifiers. So
yeah, they don't have to qualify. They were a bit disappointing in the World Cup, but that was kind of in keeping with the trend kind of all over the world of Europe's really dominating. But obviously with the home tournament, they're going to really want to impress.
Yeah, fair enough.
So yes, that should be interesting.
Oh, just the level of build-up that the Ferns get compared to the All Whites. It's like, yeah, Japan. We're
number five in the world, go hard.
Yeah.
But you're coming to it from a completely different space because with the women's game, the international games has been what's driven kind of anything in women's football.
Yeah.
You just don't have the professional environments and the club games to kind of supplement that like you do.
I know, but they're
completely
also,
different.
We're good
places.
At football in the women's game.
No, I
but mean, we're slipping. But we're slipping, and if it's kind of getting to the point if nothing's done within this 4-year window, well, that's it. The Ferns conceivably could slide.
Are we slipping because of lack of investment? Are we slipping because the women's game is growing? Or is it because other teams are catching and investing more heavily in their women's programs?
I think it's a combination of all of these things because while Europe obviously to a point was kind of fairly indifferent to the women's game, which meant that other kind of less traditional football countries, you know, were able to do very well because they've already got the football infrastructure in place. And it was just a case of them going, oh, actually, we are going to pay attention to this now. We are going to invest in it now. You've kind of already got a lot of that there to scaffold on, you know, which obviously makes it harder for here where, you know, there's no professional women's league in New Zealand. There's no professional team. So you've got all those extra steps to kind of jump through to kind of get anywhere with it.
And it's at a point where the basic athleticism that New Zealanders tend to have is now being overtaken by the rampant professionalism.
And also because, you know, literally the players are having to go all over the world to get any kind of professional minutes, but you're not having them kind of together as a unit. Whereas, you know, you look in the States, most of the US women's national team are playing NWSL. So they're all, you know, together a lot of the time anyway. Mm. So just kind of all of those little factors, obviously,
We should all be concerned.
Frosty
is currently checking if he's recording through the right microphones.
An hour in.
I did check them, and I just started picking up the keyboard in there, and I'm kind of like, oh God, it hasn't switched, has it? But no. We find
switched. Conveniently switched when you hit record.
The sound quality, if you're this far in on the sound quality, look, is shit.
It looks,
you can blame Frosty on at Frosty the Snowman on Twitter. Please feel free to abuse him.
Yeah. Even if the quality's fine, feel free.
Yeah, just feel free to abuse him anyway. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I don't get abused by Auckland City, so, you know, don't even get a follow.
Neither would I. I'm followed by them too.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm not followed.
I am.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got completely ignored. Just how rude. I should add that Eastern Suburbs apparently are getting discounted tickets for the Eden Park game.
Nice.
Not sure why.
Were they all
sure
discounted
where.
Tickets, or was it just they had 20 tickets to do something with? I'm going to find the tweet.
Yeah, it was something that was really... And they didn't, good. Yeah. They didn't spell it out, but, you know, I think that's...
It's the sort of stuff that should happen. I mean,
Phoenix
should be engaging with clubs,
yeah.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah,
if they're not, I hope the clubs are approaching them, so...
Yeah. Right. Speaking of Handy Prem, we should probably rock on with that. I have seen none this week.
And yeah, I saw the
highlights. I saw Ben Wayne's goal as well.
Oh, that was a stunner, wasn't it? That was absolutely beautiful.
Quite
goal.
Well.
Yeah, it was. So the round started with, actually, to be honest, I don't even know if it started. It's just the order of the games that I've got them in. So Waitak managed to knock over East Suburbs 1-0 thanks to an 82nd minute to Sam Burfoot, which is a bit of an upset, I think, going off current form, though Waitak is still within a chance of the top four. Then Hamilton Wanderers drew 1-1 with Southern United. Goals to Xavier Pratt in the 82nd minute and Coughlin in the 93rd for Southern. Hawke's Bay beat Canterbury 2-1. Goals coming for Hawke's Bay to Silamani and Akers, and Stroud got the one for Canterbury. Auckland City knocked over the Wenix 3-2. Goals to Clayton Lewis, Mario Illich, and Emiliano Tade for Auckland, and Ben Wayne and an Oggy for the Wenix. And then the game that I did see was Team Wellington 3 against Tasman 1. Goals coming to Jack Henry Sinclair from Penn, Taylor Shrivers, it was in the 9th minute, Taylor Shrivers with a header in the 11th minute, and Rory McEwen with a volley in the 46th minute, and then Sam Wilson got one in the 43rd minute for Tasman. It was 3-1 at half time, 3-1 at full time. Jack Henry Sinclair missed a pen in the second half as well. Or saved. We had a pen save in the second half.
The question from that one, did you get a photo of the bicycle kick?
No, I was at the wrong end.
Oh,
disappointing.
Yeah,
I was gutted.
That would have been one of the best bicycle kicks you'll ever see, except it got saved.
Yeah, it was I had a right angle if I'd got the ball on his foot, but just player movement prior and afterwards means I would have probably been out of focus. So even the one photographer who was down that end, he had players in his way and didn't get it either. So.
Oh, disappointing. Yeah, it was a good one.
Yeah. Oh, such a shame. Do you remember what the table is now? Still Auckland City sitting well
ahead. Give me a second, I'll look it up.
I'm going to fill just. But Team Wellington still hanging on to second, I assume.
Well, if they're one and they were second by three points, I'm going to guess that they're still second.
Yep.
But, you know, that's just me going off basic math.
I could be very right.
Interesting with the Wenix giving Auckland City a bit of a scare, though. It's, you know, 3-2 is a much finer than I suspect Auckland City would like to cut that. It sounds like the second half was pretty much all Wenix. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think it might have even been either 3-0 or 2-0 at halftime. So the Wenix came right back into it in the second half from my understanding.
I've been saying all season that, For the first year and that second year, you know, in a 2-year project, these kids are actually playing some good football.
Well, if there's any team, though, you expect to be able to, you know, dig in and hold on to a lead like that, it's Auckland City. And obviously
they did,
but a bit of a scare will, you know, interesting.
I've done Waitak a bit of a disservice, so I should apologise to them, because after the weekend's round, they're currently sitting third with a game in hand, and winning that game in hand, they'd still be third, but only a point behind T-Dubs, who are in second. So Auckland City are on 31 points, T-Dubs on 25. Waitak on 21, but with a game in hand. Fourth place is Eastern Suburbs on 19. Tasman in fifth on 16, along with Hamilton Wanderers, who've also got a game in hand on 16. So that fourth spot, if Wanderers win that game against Waitak in hand, it's going to be a tough one to say they will, but there could be a bit of a fight for that fourth spot. Hawke's Bay next with 15 points. Southern in eighth with 13 points. Wenix in ninth with 11 points, and the Canterbury Dragons propping up the table with 9 points. So, it's a relatively tight table, bar the first two. There's 10 points separating 7 teams. So it's quite good.
Tight.
Mm. Yeah, T-Dub's game was quite an enjoyable watch, actually.
Was it?
Yeah.
I've heard people saying it was not a good watch.
No, I really enjoyed it. There was plenty of opportunities. There should have been a lot more goals. 3-1 at halftime felt about right, and I think it could easily have been more in the second half.
I think particularly compared to the previous T-Dubs games. Oh, God,
T-Dubs games I've watched where there'd been one goal in 180 minutes and it was scored in the 181st minute of that, it was pretty tedious. This was a much, much more enjoyable watch.
Good. Good that they've managed to get their boots on again, their scoring boots.
Yeah, because they'd been, one goal in three games? Because they had a 1-0 loss, a 0-0 draw, and then a 1-0 win. It was good to see them scoring very early on.
Obviously, they've lost Watson and
Bassett.
Yeah. Thank you.
So the first goal they scored was that pen from Jack Henry St. Clair. Keeper managed to get a leg on it as he was diving out of the way, but it's just gone up into his own net.
Presumably not diving out of the way, presumably diving.
And he chose the side and it was wrong, yeah. And then really nicely worked set piece goal to get Taylor Shriver's free for a header for the second, which was excellent. Open play goal for the third, which was a volley from Rory McEwen to the near post, which was nice. Don't remember Tasman's goal, do you?
No,
it's a gear gone. So Tasman were good for their goal. They certainly could have scored more than the one they had. So.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. They played well and gave their own. And
they had one off the bar, didn't they? I think post.
Can't remember, to be honest.
Yeah.
So, yeah, decent game. Good watch. People should be getting along to those. It's a really nice way to spend a Sunday afternoon.
It's starting to get to the pointy end now too, so everything to play for. Start seeing some bobbies coming out. Never see those on, no. Davey F. Mm. Never.
No.
Never.
No. It's not where Alex Rufer broke his leg. No.
I just realised that I didn't actually ask a question I was going to about the Knicks for the game at Eden Park. So we thank Steinman for Rufer.
Do you want to, maybe we should make this our Patreon content. Yeah,
are we slicing this back in somewhere? Or?
No, I just
think yes.
Yeah, surely. Yeah.
So do I, yes.
Do we think any other change regarding
it's out of five for pain? Because it has to.
Has to, yeah.
Well,
the other option is Callan Elliott.
Well,
he's a right back.
Wilson apparently has been sodden. Yeah, I'm just saying his name because apparently he can play at right back.
Callan Elliott hasn't been seen this season, but it would be very, I think it would be unusual to see him cracked out against Melbourne City if you were going to play him at any point. I think Seattle Fire comes in, to be honest.
Yeah. Not far wrong.
Not going to ask Davila to play at right back again. Do you not remember early in the season where we had him covering back there? He wasn't officially playing right back, but we had him dropping in there.
He did
every single play.
Yes, and then we've changed.
Anytime Fenton bombed forward, Davila all of a sudden was the back marker.
And he wasn't an offensive player. That's right.
No, and it looked horrendous.
I mean, he tried.
Good on him for doing what he was asked.
Yeah,
but
good on everyone for realizing it was the wrong idea.
His strength is definitely in the final third, and a lot more in the middle third as well than the. Than the defensive third.
And final question, who are our front four? Davila.
Hooper, Ball, Davila and Piscopo.
Right, you're playing Hooper.
Mm-hmm.
Hooper and Ball up front, yep. And Davila and Piscopo.
Yes. I thought Piscopo was good against Perth. I think he was possibly our best player.
Well, he's certainly there for free kicks.
Oh, that free kick that he hit, that was really nicely saved just before Hooper's second goal. That was a beautiful free kick.
He hits a good dead ball. I was more meaning the one he scored for the Oleroos. That was a stomper. Ella?
Yeah, that's the front four I'd go for as well.
I start Hooper as well.
Right. Yep, I am on the fence actually, but I suspect Hooper, you can't leave him out after that.
I mean, that would make for an interesting conversation, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Hey, you got 2 and 30.
Nah.
We'll give you 35 next time.
Because if you can, you can play.
Yeah. Well, you know Hooper.
We just asked for consistency. Yeah.
You know Hooper's actually just going to say, I can, boss. Put me in.
I'll settle for three, I'll be honest.
Let's wrap it up there and say goodnight. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Get to the Morningside Tavern. Get to the Morningside Tavern pre-kickoff.
Morningside, all life brings you.
200th episode brought to you by Shit Hot Takes brings you.
Brought to you by Shit Hot Takes brings you.
That's right.
Expected results in Perth bring you. Dubious red cards brings you.
Dubious yellow cards bring you.
Shithousery of a referee performance brings you. Kersey being a cunt brings you.
Cam getting fired the fuck up brings you.